It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. We hear some big, scary words circulating. Economic downturn, recession, layoffs. Whether money's tight in your household right now, or you're just thinking about the fact that it could be sometime soon, this conversation on smart spending is for you. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and the phone lines are open for your calls at 800-642-1234. What small ways have you managed to save money during this time? Maybe times are tight. What question do you have about personal finance? 800-642-1234. The lines are open now. Or you can email ideas at WPR.org. Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. Michelle, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Let's start from the perspective that someone is struggling, that maybe they've lost their job, and at that point, really any amount of money saved is a positive. Is there a way to save on something that is almost a necessity now, like Wi-Fi or maybe cable?
Yeah, you know, it's really tough right now for so many people to tell them, be more frugal, when they're thinking, are you kidding me? But there are some things that you can do. Like even with cable and streaming services, you know, many people are home. If you lost your job, you're home. You're looking for a job. You need your Wi-Fi. But maybe you don't need all the streaming services that you had when you had a job. And I know that's hard to say, but if you've got a streaming service, a couple of them, and you cut out one or two, that could be $20 a month. And that $20 could put food on your table or help put towards a utility bill or the gas in your car as you go search for a job. So every dollar saved is something that you can use to help bridge the gap between when you can get employment or when your unemployment checks start coming in.
That makes me think about the fact that sometimes it's hard for us to understand what's a necessity and what's a luxury. Right. When we're talking about streaming services, I'm just thinking if I'm trying to find a job, if I'm trying to ready my resume, and I've got three kids home from school and daycare, and they can't go there, I mean, having something for them to do that doesn't require my supervision might actually be a necessity. I shouldn't necessarily feel bad if I need to keep one service just as part of our family, right? I mean, these are decisions families have to make.
Yeah, right. And that's absolutely correct. But when you think about your pre-COVID budget or pre-job loss budget, there are lots of things on there that seem still like a necessity. And it usually takes people a couple of months to cut everything down. So if you've got, you know, definitely keep your Wi-Fi, but you can go online now with YouTube and all kinds of things to provide, to find free things that you can help show your children. So let's say, I mean, I'm thinking about my house. We've got Hulu and Disney Plus and Netflix. So, you know, when you've lost your job, you cannot afford all of those. So pick the ones where the kids watch the most, like maybe, you know, I don't want to promote any particular one. So
one
I don't
of them.
Want to say which one, but you know which ones that your kids, you know, gravitate to, and then cut out the other ones. And I know that's a tough call, but just for a short period of time till you can get a handle over your expenses, because we get to the point where everything seems like a necessity when we had the money. And now that you don't, it becomes hard to cut things off because you've told yourself, I absolutely need this. But a lot of things you don't need, you may want, and it may seem like a need, even with the children. And listen, a lot of the plans have family and friends, you know, plans. Like my kid got in with her, a bunch of her girlfriends, and they bought, they went in together with a streaming service, right? Because mama wasn't going to pay for it. So, you know, call around to your relatives and friends. I'm not asking you to violate any of the rules of the streaming services, but call around, and if it is allowed, then you can share with someone who maybe still has a job and say, listen, I can't afford this. If it's allowable, can I share your streaming services to make do? And I think everybody can understand that that is something that is, you know, that you can do now when things are so dire for your family.
Yeah, so many of multiple users, or maybe, you know, PBS Kids is another option for
us. That's exactly right.
Michelle Singletary, who's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, this hour. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Have you found a way to pool your resources with other people still in an ethical manner? Have you invested a little bit of money in a different way right now, thinking about hard times that could be ahead? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Michelle, while we're on the electronics track, what about cell phone plans? Because they are spendy.
They are expensive. Listen, this is going to, I don't know if I say this, I'll probably.
No turning back.
It's going to be shut down. But, you know, a lot of parents have gotten cell phones and plans for most of their children. And we're talking little people, you know, 8, 9, you know, 5, 6 and so forth. Now's the time to take, you know, you got to shut that down. And I know I've got these multiple plans that you may think, oh, it's only $10, it's only $20. Again, when you've lost your job, those amounts of money make a big difference. And so, you know, while you're looking for a job or you're online, you can let your kid play on your phone, but you've got to say, call your cell phone company, I can't afford all of this, and go to the basic plan, because we're not moving around, your kids are not at soccer, and you're worried about them calling you to come pick them up. And so we're talking about extreme measures in an extreme time. And so just cut back as much as you can. Again, $10, $20, $30 a month, it'll add up to, you know, a meal for that day or for that week. And that's what I'm talking about. You've got to really mind your budget for every dollar that can make a difference if you've lost your job during this pandemic.
If people are getting unemployment benefits, what's the best way to spend that money right now? Should we treat it differently than normal income or not?
I think you should. If you've lost your job, I like to explain it as, if you've ever gone to an emergency room and it's been overcrowded and you've come in with, say, a broken wrist and it hurts, you know, like the Dickens, and you they say you have to wait. And so you wait and someone comes in behind you and they get taken right back and you're outraged. But in those situations, they have triaged the patients. They're taking the ones that are severe. So that person who came in after you may be having a heart attack. So, of course, they go back first. Your risk is important, but that person having a heart attack is more important. Treat your budget the same way. So when you don't have a lot of money coming in, it's the necessities that count. They are the emergency patients. So you pay for the roof over your head. You pay for food, gas in your car so you can go look for your car, the card note, and then everything else goes. Your credit card debts right now, they're not a priority. They got to sit in the waiting room. Now, that doesn't mean that I'm telling you to ignore them. You want to call your creditors. You want to say, listen, I've lost my job. Can you put my payments on pause? I just can't do this. But if they won't, most have done that, but if they won't, you just can't pay it. Now, in normal times, I would never tell you to say that, you know, but, you know, again, these are extreme times, and those bills, those that aren't a priority, that aren't going to shut your power off or prevent you from putting food on the table, they're just not a priority. You can't do that right now. Focus on the most things that you need right now if you have lost your job and you're on unemployment.
If I have to call up a credit card company and ask them to manage payments differently or suspend them, what do I need to have as proof that that happened?
Well, most of them right now are taking you for the word. No one, you know, it's very rare that someone's going to call up and actually have a job and do this. And so they may require you to, you know, present some information from your employment. But I have not run into a situation where anyone said they didn't believe me that I lost my job. So you just verify that you've lost your job, that you're on unemployment, and most of them are automatically giving you those payment pauses.
So take that opportunity when you need it. Personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary stays with us this hour as we talk about how to best use the money that we have. Now is the time to share your story at 800-642-1234. What have helped you stash away some cash right now? Or maybe you've seriously had to cut down on things. How are you managing that budget? And what do you want to know about personal finance? 800-642-1234. Email ideas@WPR.org. I'm Keely Boltina. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Thank you. Not everyone has the opportunity to save money. Sometimes you just have to spend every cent you make and then some to get by. But if you've got a little money stashed away in investments or a retirement account, you'll have to weigh when and how to cash it in. Michelle Singletary is here to talk us through what we should think about here on The Morning Show. She's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. I'm Keely Boltina, and we want to know what's on your mind when you're thinking about what you make and what you spend. Give us a call now at 800-642-1234. Send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Are you struggling to find ways to cut corners? What do you want to know from this financial expert? We're here to talk it through with you. 800-642-1234. Michelle, what if we found ourselves in a situation where we just don't have the cash flow, but we know there's money in a retirement account? What do we do?
Well, you know, normally, under normal conditions, you'd say, like, make that the last resort. But obviously, people need funds to run their household. And the stimulus package that passed in March, the CARES Act, provides a way for people to withdraw money from their retirement account penalty-free. Normally, if you're 59 and a half or younger than 59 and a half, you incur a 10% penalty if you take an early withdrawal from your retirement account. So the CARES Act did away with that penalty. So now you can take that withdrawal up to $100,000 out of your retirement account. You can also take a loan, a higher limit loans than normal. And the good thing is that the withdrawal, the taxes, normally when you take a withdrawal, there's a 20% withholding for taxes, but that's gone. And then you get 3 years to pay that the taxes on that withdrawal. So that allows people to take money out of their retirement without all those penalties that are normally in place. So if you feel like, listen, my unemployment has run out, I have no savings, it's just not happening, then sure, go ahead and tap your retirement account. This is extreme times if you have to. But only take what you need, because you can go back and get more. So just take it, you know, like maybe month to month to see, so that if you do get reemployed or find a job, then you don't have to take as much out of your retirement account.
That's interesting, because I think of that as like a one-time big deal that you decide to pull money from your retirement and then, you know, you have it and you have to try to plan for a big amount. And you're saying just slow walk it, take some steps instead of one big leap.
That's right. And, you know, with the CARES Act, you can also put money back. So if you're saying, okay, well, I don't want to really do that, but, you know, maybe I want to take out maybe 2 months, you can. And if after 2 months you find a job and you don't need that money, you can actually put it back with no penalty. So you don't have to pay taxes on that. But I say take it slow, because sometimes people may overestimate what they need. And then, truthfully, the way things people really do their money in practice, once they get that money, it's very unlikely that they would put it back, even if they get another job. So that's why I say take it slow, so that you don't take out more than you need. And right now, you know, the market's really been crazy and a roller coaster, but the market is doing really well right now. So you don't want to remove money from the market that could be growing. That's another reason why you want to take it slow in terms of taking money out. Because from March till now, I mean, March, the market was, you know, just tanked and people were just in a panic. But it has come back. And I mean, I'm looking at my own retirement account. So if you had removed all that money that you would need for, you know, that you didn't need right away, it wouldn't have been in the market to grow. So that's another reason why you want to take it slow.
Steve from Richland Center called but couldn't stay with us. Steve works in the dairy industry and also notes that Steve has another part-time job. Thinking about part-time work, is now the time to take any job, or is this a time, if we can float it financially, to hold out longer?
I say if you can get a job and it has to, you piece together one or two or three jobs, do what you have to do, because that will prevent you from having to tap, say, your retirement fund. I know this is really tough. And listen, I didn't come from money. So some of the things I'm telling you, some people might think, well, of course she could say that. She works for the Washington Post. But listen, folks, I was raised by my grandmother who worked as a nursing assistant in a hospital. So I know what it's like to, you know, really be living on practically nothing. So I'm not telling you anything that I haven't lived through myself. I literally know what it's like to be hungry. You know, there were times before my grandmother took us in that we didn't have food in the refrigerator. So my heart goes out to the dairy farmers, and I'm sorry. So I get that you are suffering. And some of the things I'm saying, you're thinking, I can't cut off my cable. I can't tap my retirement. You've told me never to do that. But this is a tough time, and you have to do whatever it takes. So, yes, take that second job. Take that third job if you can. Everybody in the houses who can work should be working. This is a time to just pull together. And listen, the other thing is, you know, call and ask for help. I know my grandmother was a very proud person, so it's really hard to like apply for food stamps or federal or state aid. But I know that you are a hard worker, and that's the last thing you want to do. But in times like this, you need to ask for help and get the help that you need.
We're talking to personal finance expert Michelle Singletary, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. Are you working hard and still not able to make ends meet? What are you trying to figure out? What questions do you have from someone who's lived it and who offers financial advice? Maybe you found a creative way to make it work for your family and you want to share that with others. Pick up the phone and call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Michelle, so much to talk about here, and you just mentioned food. Food is a major monthly expense, for weekly expense, daily expense for so many people. What should we think about when it comes to food? I think the most obvious thing most people think of, well, I have to make more at home. But still, we have a lot of decisions to make when it comes to what food we buy.
You know, like, so I kind of separated this pandemic in two pots for people who are having financial trouble. So if you've lost your job, you're unemployment, you just have to shop smarter. I mean, again, pre-COVID, we can tend to go and buy a lot of processed food. And, you know, we just go to the market and everything seems like it's a need, right? So you have to shop smarter. One-pot meals, beans and rice, things that will stretch, things that will fill you up. Still as healthy as possible, you know, but you know, so not a lot of processed stuff with a lot of sugar and things like that. So, like, when I was being raised by my grandmother, we had a lot of one-pot meals, you know, beans and rice and stews and things that could stretch, you know, spaghetti with a salad, you know, things that that will help you have leftovers. I mean, some people are like, I never eat leftovers. I live off leftovers, you know. So those are the kinds of things that you want to do. You know, look in your neighborhood for food banks. And again, you know, reach out to folks that you know who haven't lost their job, and maybe they can help you when they shop. Listen, I'm in a rough way right now. When you shop, if you can afford it, if you could pick a couple things up for me, I would really appreciate it. Those are the kind of conversations that you have. And then again, apply for any aid that will help. Even if you only qualify for $30 a month, that's still $30 more that you'll have to buy food to put on your table. Now, if you have, you've still got your job, everything is stable, this is the time to look around between the people in your family and friends and your neighborhood and see who is struggling. Ask questions. If you're a member of a church, let them know. Let it be known that, hey, I am a resource. If you are giving out food and you need me to come and help and give out, give more cash, I'm here to help. Don't wait for people to ask. If you are in a position to help, if you're in the market and you see a family, you know, I think it's okay to say, hey, do you need some help? I do that myself, you know. I mean, my husband and I, we are over tipping now. I know, you know, we're really frugal, but we're eating out. We're outside. I don't eat in restaurants right now, but we're out on the veranda. And I was talking, it was a college student who was wait serving us. And we just had a conversation with him on how is he doing, what's school like. And when it came time for the bill, I said, honey, I think we over tipped him, like I think it was 20 or 25%. And then we gave him extra money just for him, because normally you have to share your tips, which I think is perfectly fine. But we wanted him to have some extra just for him, so we gave him some extra money. We probably tipped, I don't know, 50 or 60%. But we're in the position that we can do that. And so it was just by having a conversation with him to say, listen, we just want to help you out while you're going to school right now. And as you go about your day, you know, do that. If you're picking up takeout food and you see the workers there, especially if they're young workers, I mean, they're out putting themselves out there to earn some money, and they're putting themselves in a position where they're, you know, exposed to a lot of people. So I went to pick up some sandwiches for my family, and I tipped everybody who was working behind it on the grill and everything. Now, normally I'm very frugal. It's like I'm just going to tip what I'm supposed to tip. But it's just like I'm looking around for opportunities to help people. And don't make a big deal about it. You don't have to like, oh, I'm going to tip everybody. Just slip people some money. And as you're talking to people, you know, people will share parts of their life when you meet them. And when you hear things like, yeah, my dad lost his job and I'm working here, you pick up on these things. And as you're picking up on them, if it's in your heart and if it's in your budget, help them out right there on the spot.
Personal finance columnist Michelle Singletary stays with us this hour as we talk about how to best use the money that we have and how to figure out where we can cut expenses as things get tight. Now is the time to share your story, 800-642-1234. Have you found a way to pool your resources with other people? Have you decided to ask for help, or maybe you found a way to help someone else out? Let's talk about personal finance on this hour of the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina. Thanks for being here with us on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Join us tonight at 8 for live NPR coverage of the Republican National Convention. We bring you the mix of virtual events and live events planned as delegates confirm Donald Trump as the party's candidate for president. That's tonight through Thursday night, starting at 8 o'clock on Wisconsin Public Radio and at WPR.org. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're talking about personal finance this hour. We're learning where to spend our money to make it stretch, whether we're scraping by or if we actually feel pretty confident about our financial health. Our guest is Michelle Singletary. She's a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. What tip do you want to share with people that might help their financial outlook? Maybe you are struggling and you are trying to find where to cut spending. Let's talk about it together at 800-642-1234. And we've got Megan from Genesee on the line. Hi, Megan.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. So you were mentioning about ways to save on your grocery budget earlier, and my husband and I have found that having a garden and growing our own vegetables is really a great way to do that. Packs of seeds usually cost a dollar or two at the most, and oftentimes you'll get much more produce out of that than if you just bought it at the store. So I think if folks have space and time to kind of care for a garden, that's a really great way to save on that food budget. And it is a little late in the season, but you can still put in leafy greens or radishes, and a lot of that stuff will just grow on a windowsill. And we have been lucky enough to have a pretty bountiful garden this year, so we have been sharing with our neighbors and coworkers and folks that we find to be in need.
Megan, thank you so much for sharing your experience growing your own food. And Michelle, Megan mentions, you know, that this is a great opportunity, and it does require some privilege of having the space and the time to help food grow.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think she said that there's some things you can grow on your windowsill, but for many people, that's not an option. But if it is an option, my grandmother used to grow tomatoes and all kinds of things in our backyard. We had a very tiny backyard, but she still grew some things, and that did help out. Her tomatoes were fabulous. So if that's something that you can do, you've got the space, but clearly a lot of people don't, or just don't know how to do it. I mean, anything green I touched dies, unfortunately. So, but if that, I mean, I think her point is just think outside the box for a lot of people, where you may not have thought about, I've got this little patch in my backyard, or even maybe a neighborhood garden that you can chip in with your neighbors. Just think of any way that you can make your food budget stretch.
Yeah, those tomatoes, they just taste better from the backyard, too. So if you can
they
make
sure
it happen.
Do.
Megan, thank you so much for that call. And now we've got Peter in Madison on the line. Good morning, Peter.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to hear the whole program yet, so maybe this has been mentioned, but some things that I thought about right before the break was things like couponing. There are farm co-ops, so you can pay a certain price and get fresh food for the season. Things like Goodwill or other discount stores would also maybe help you stretch your budget. So I wanted to mention at least those three things. And I, somebody just right before here was also talking about gardening. So
yeah, absolutely. Peter, thanks for those tips for sure. And, you know, Michelle, Peter is still speaking to that idea of, you know, figure things out on your own, but also look around and work with people in your community.
Right. I like the idea of the food co-ops. I'm not a big coupon fan. If you think about it, a lot of the coupons are for processed food. It's very rarely for the things that you actually need, like cookies and cereal and things like that. And then oftentimes you have to buy multiples to get the, you know, the coupon to work. So I just rarely use coupons anymore unless it's something I would normally buy. Mm-hmm. So just be careful with that because it has this false sense that you're saving money when a lot of times you're just buying a whole bunch of stuff that you probably shouldn't be eating or don't need. But if it does apply, you know, then sure, use it. Definitely lots of communities do have food co-ops or food situations where you pay a fee and you can, you know, get some more things. I think what Megan and Peter are saying is just sort of think. But I will also say this. When you're in the middle of a crisis, it's really hard to think about these kinds of things because you're so worried and it's not something that you normally do. It's really hard to tell people, those of us who do these sort of as a natural, to go out there and you know, join a food co-op or, you know, get more coupons. So that's where the rest of us come in, you know, trying to get out the information. That's why these programs like what we're doing right now is helpful, because maybe somebody's listening while they're searching for a job or in their car, and so now you hear the information. But putting a lot on the individual, it's hard when you're in the middle of the situation to remember these things or think about these things.
Right, because you just feel scared and desperate because you don't know where your food's going to come from.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Some people have the opportunity right now to not be driving back and forth to work, as we've seen workplaces, when they're able to, having people work from home. So that's not true for certainly grocery stores or hospital workers, but for people who work in office, maybe that's something that they're not getting in the car. Seems like there's probably an advantage there on gas. Are there other ways that we can save when it comes to vehicles?
Well, you know, lots of insurance companies have been giving rebates. So if yours hasn't, call your insurance company and say, listen, I'm not driving to work. Everybody in the house is home. Is there something that you can do to lower my bill? You know, and this is a good time to shop around for rates. I mean, most people get insurance company and never shop around after they get with this particular company. I try to do it at least once a year or every other year. Like, I go through all my plans and see where I can shift costs. And I'll call them and say, yeah, I'm thinking about going someplace else. What can you do for me? Do that with your cable bill. Do that with every service provider. My husband and I spent one day, and we just made a list of everybody that we needed to call to redo our plan. So we called our cable company. You know, yeah, I'm not watching these channels. What can you do? We called our phone company. Yeah, I'm not feeling this plan right now. This is a lot of stuff going on. And so I think about three or four providers, we were able to knock, you know, money off of our budget by just spending the day just calling different providers and just looking at our plans to cut some costs.
Which is very different than, say, if you're in good financial position and there's relief because of the coronavirus pandemic, calling up and taking advantage of one of those plans when you don't really need it right now. You're saying you can still have those negotiations, but you don't have to lie about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, we didn't say, hey, we lost our jobs. We just said, you know, we're looking at our budget and we're trying to, you know, especially my husband's working from home, I'm working from home. There are different things that we're doing differently. And I, you know, even if you've got your job, you should be constantly looking at your budget and ways to cut, because all those funds that cut can go into your emergency fund, can boost your retirement fund, and guess what? Help other people. You know, my husband and I created what we call a family fund. So we save money in a pot for times when our family is in need. And so when they are in need, we've got a separate savings account that we can pull money from so that it doesn't affect our household budget. And if you have a stable job right now, I suggest that you do that. Just create another savings account then that you can, you know, help not just people in your family, but right now there's such a need. And so if you have the feel, you know, you have it in your heart and you have it in your budget, you can say, oh, well, you know what, I'm going to, you know, maybe last year you gave 2% of your income in charity. This year you'll do 4% or 5%. And there's money right there in the pot that you've been saving all year to do that.
We're talking to Michelle Singletary. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money, for The Washington Post. And we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234 as we navigate how to spend our money right now. Not just how to save it, but also how to spend it. What questions do you have for a financial expert? How can we work together to figure out where we might be able to find room in your budget to cut spending? Do you have a question about calling up a different company and asking for changes to your plan? We've got Michelle here ready to take your call at 800-642-1234. There's a line for you now. And we, if you're still making money, as we've just been talking about, and you're in a fine financial position, then what is the case to be made for being more frugal right now?
Well, you know, money people are in a good financial position, but they're still living paycheck to paycheck. So their job hasn't been disrupted. And now is the time to look at your budget and build that emergency fund that you've been promising yourself to have, but you never really got around to it. And you've been okay because you've got steady money coming in. Or maybe you have an emergency fund, but it really isn't at the level that it should be. You know, you hear experts say, I recommend 3 to 6 months. But if you're a highly paid individual, you really ought to have 12 months worth of emergency funds set aside. Because studies show that when you lose your job and you're highly paid, it takes anywhere from 18 months to 2 years to get back to that same income level. So build an emergency fund. I like a second pot of money. As you can see, I like a lot of pots. So a second pot I call the Life Happens Fund. Because a lot of times you don't have your emergency fund money, and this is if you lose your job. These are dire situations because you've been dipping in it for everyday things like fixing your car, or if you've got kids, they always break something. So a second pot is that you save for those things, you know, fixing your roof or your fence or your dishwasher. So you save separate in that. That way, that money that's set aside for when you lose your job, or say you become ill and you run out of sick leave, that's where you pull for that from the emergency fund. So you have emergency fund, Life Happens Fund, and then look at your retirement. If you're doing okay, are you saving at the level that you should be saving? Because now you've got less expenses. You're maybe not driving as much, or you're not eating out, or maybe you didn't take that vacation this year because you couldn't, or were, you know, it didn't feel like it was safe enough for you. So that may be money that you can channel into your retirement fund to boost that. You should be, if you can, saving about 15% of your income into your retirement plan.
Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post, and there's still a bit of time for your question this morning, so call us now. What do you want to know about money? What's on your mind? 800-642-1234 is the number to call. There's a line for you now here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to The Ideas Network. We're talking about money on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. We're going over the priorities for spending less in uncertain times and how to make your dollar stretch. We're talking about the luxury of having savings and how to use the money we do have for good. Michelle Singletary is talking us through some of those tips. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. And Eve from Oconomowoc has a question for us. Hi, Eve.
Yes, good morning. I'm so happy to take my call. You can take my call. I have my first loan through the car manufacturer instead of like a bank, and et cetera. And I get a monthly statement just like I do with my credit card. But I noticed it keeps going down. But my budget calls for what I had originally intended for my monthly payments. Should I keep paying that monthly payment, or should I take that, what they're suggesting I pay?
Eve, thanks for the question. Michelle, when your payment officially goes down, keep paying it or maybe use it in other places? How do you decide?
Well, is the monthly, I couldn't hear for the background, is the month, is it a credit card? I couldn't hear which payment it is.
It's a car loan through the car manufacturing company.
Okay, loan. And so they've given her a price break. No, I would not. I would pay because, you know, when you pay less, you're going to end up paying more interest. So, in fact, I would try to increase payments to get rid of that debt as soon as possible. So if someone offers you a payment pause and you don't need it, don't take it unless they're going to pause the interest on that pause payment. So, no, I would keep tracking to pay that car off as soon as possible.
Okay, so don't pay the lower amount if you can afford it. Keep up with what you had budgeted. That makes
That's
sense.
Correct. Now, if you need that break because you've lost your job, then sure, because this is a, you know, an extraordinary time. But if you don't know, you don't need it. And that's a good question because, like, right now, at least through the end of September and now through the end of the year, if you've got a student loan that is federally backed, there's a, you know, you can pause your payments if you need it. But if you don't need it, don't take that pause because right now it's 0% interest. So every payment you make goes directly to the principal. And you can make a lot of headway between now and the end of the year on that student loan debt. So if you don't need it, definitely, you know, even double up if you can to get rid of that debt as soon as possible because everything you pay goes directly to the principal, which means you're going to pay less interest overall.
There's a sea of financial advice out there. What is your best tip for us? What's your best piece of advice?
Well, again, I'm going to talk about it two ways. So those people who are struggling, you know, I want you not to stress and not worry that, you know, you're doing some things that normally you wouldn't do, like not paying your credit card bill or not paying on things that you can't. Don't just do what you can do right now and don't beat yourself up because this is not your fault. You know, this is a virus that none of us, you know, knew was going to be so devastating. Now, on the other side, if you your income is steady, you know, use this opportunity to look at your budget and save more and reach those financial goals that you have set or haven't set. You know, if you've got some savings in your budget, now's the time to build up your emergency fund. Really look at your financial situation. A lot of us, I mean, even if you're still working, coming home, there's not a lot we can do. You know, before we were ripping and running and didn't really have time to pay attention to our finances. But this is the time to sit down and look at your budget and see what you can do to make it better.
Michelle Singletary, you have offered us such practical advice with this real context, and we just so appreciate the time you've taken to talk personal finance with us, especially when it's difficult. Thank you so much.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Thank you for having me.
Mm-hmm. Michelle Singletary is a personal finance columnist for The Washington Post. She writes the nationally syndicated column, The Color of Money. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum talking with the author of a new critically acclaimed collection of essays that explore Midwestern complexities, gender, and softball.
Even though 2020 has been a year, Melissa Falavino has had some bright spots this summer. The New York City writer released her debut essay collection, Tomboyland. It's a deep dive into identity, zeroing in on gender and sexuality. Falavino's complexities unfold as she explores her life growing up in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin, digging into her love of meatballs and softballs, moths and tornadoes. Another bright spot of the summer? It was when we talked during her visit to Madison a few weeks ago.
Oh my God, we are in my absolute favorite place on the planet, which is at Olbrich Park, sitting in center field in Packer chairs that Maureen brought. It is actually a perfect day.
It really is. Falavino and I met at the Olbrich Park softball fields mostly because of the pandemic, but also because she writes about the sport's impact on her in Tomboyland. Here's an excerpt from the essay, Switch Hitter.
In the Midwest, softball is something of a hallowed thing for girls. Here in America's heartland, where so many girls are born and raised by generations of farm families, their bodies built for baling hay, their shoulders broad, their backs and hands strong, their muscles long and lean. Like they were born to play ball. Like they came out of the womb with gloves on their hands, cleats already digging into the dirt. Growing up in a small town where boys were boys and girls were girls, playing softball also meant being called a lesbian. This was the worst possible insult, one we worked hard to combat. It meant applying too much makeup, even and perhaps especially before games. Making sure our hair was just right, straightened and sprayed at lockers between class. Wearing short skirts and high heels and low-cut shirts on game days. All this to assure the boys, and the men, that even though we played softball, we were still girls. That we were sexy, available, and straight. That our bodies were objects for them to desire.
Can you explain why you decided to write that section?
Yeah, I mean, I knew that I wanted to write about softball because it was such an important part of my life, and I knew it was complex.
You were a big deal in the Mount Horeb world of softball.
In the world of small-town sports, I guess I was something of a big deal. You know, it was my life, and it was my plan, and I was going to go play D1 softball at UW, and I got close, and then totally failed, and the whole trajectory of my life changed. You know, everything that I sort of expected I was going to do and be didn't happen. And I took this totally different route and became a writer. And there's still some grief, though, you know? Like, and I grieve that life, that playing the sport competitively, like that, what that did for me as a kid. And so I knew that I wanted to write about that. But then I was like, oh, there's so much more here. So I get into the ways that we as girls, when we're young, we learn to perform under the male gaze. And even if it's not told to us explicitly, we learn it implicitly. And like everything that we do, maybe especially in a small town, about being desired and being attractive and being popular and being objects for boys and, you know, sometimes even adult men to want. And it's a pretty vulnerable piece, and there's
it
a lot
is.
Of things that I still am like freaked out to have in the world. And there are days when I'm like, why would I do that? Why would I write that? But the cool thing has been having predominantly women, a lot of queer women, you know, writing me and saying like, oh man, I identified so hard with this, and like I feel like you were writing my story, and it's such a ubiquitous thing, girls playing sports, you know, but there's so much complexity there, especially within the realm of identity and the body and desire. So
that was Melissa Falavino, author of the new essay collection Tomboyland. She's a Mount Horeb native who now writes, teaches, and plays music in New York City. Want to hear a longer conversation with Falavino? Tune into this weekend's Beta on WPR, where we talk about empathizing with moths and what it means to turn your body into a machine. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lola and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
You don't have to wait until this weekend, though, if you're more interested in this story. Be sure to join us tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock as we talk with that Wisconsin author live. We'll further the conversation discussing the language surrounding gender and identity, and your calls are welcome here on the Ideas Network, so mark that down. Up next here on the morning show, we're talking about the financial outlook for cities across Wisconsin, and we'll compare them to communities around the country. And there's developing news out of Kenosha. A deadly shooting last night happened during protests over racial injustice, and protesters and police clashed violently. We get the latest up ahead. I'm Keely Boltina, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.